For more on this, we're now joined by Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, founder of the Gift of the Givers, and he joins us for this conversation via our video link. Dr. Imtiaz, thank you so much for joining us here on The Late Edition. Perhaps let's start off here. What are your thoughts when it comes to the tragedy that has struck the people of Morocco?
Well, every tragedy like this, it's heartbreaking. It's tough for the people, for the families, for the country, for the government. There's a huge loss of life. There's more than 2,900 people have already passed on. There's more than 5,500 people injured. And, you know, if there's people still missing in the rubble, we don't know whether they're alive or deceased. So it's a huge tragedy. It's complicated because it's in the mountains. It reminds me of the earthquake that was in Pakistan, 8 October 2005. Reminds me of the earthquake that was in Nepal, in the mountains again, in 2015. Very complicated to work in the mountains. It's tough. And you need all the resources and get to the areas as soon as you can get. But of course, we've offered the Moroccan government, as many governments and NGOs throughout the world have done, have offered assistance. We're just waiting to see what the decision is going to be.
Yeah, and I was coming to that exactly because I heard you there on my colleague's package saying that you will not impose yourself when it comes to assistance in Morocco. Have they responded, or perhaps when are you expecting them to respond?
Well, there's mixed kind of messages. You know, our ambassador Ibrahim Idris in Rabat spoke to them, you know, to people within the Interior Ministry. Our DG spoke to the ambassador. People from Inspector General of Intelligence spoke to the ambassador and the deputy ambassador. I spoke to the deputy ambassador. And the kind of message is sent out that, you know, we are offering us taking limited assistance from friendly countries. We have accepted assistance from Spain, UK, UAE, and Qatar. And on a day-by-day basis, we'll decide if we need any more assistance. We don't want to complicate the area. It's very complicated, you know, because we can't access the areas. And so that's the complication. So the sort of replies come back, you know, we appreciate the assistance, your offer of assistance. But at the moment, we've only accepted from four countries.
Yeah. And, you know, should the Moroccan government respond as early as yesterday, when it comes to the teams you have prepared, you know, how many teams or how many people will you be sending to Morocco to assist that country?
Right now, we have 33 people on standby, 28 search and rescue, and as you mentioned in the beginning in your introduction, four of them are from CPUT. CPUT is a partner to us. They also have their own equipment, which assists in getting more equipment on site. The second team that's going to be joining us for the first time is Gauteng EMRS. You know, they also come with their own equipment, six people from them. And then the rest is our teams made up from the people from Limpopo, province, from Free State and other parts of the country. Many of them work in government facilities, and we encourage taking people that work in government facilities because it upskills our people and it trains them further for the public service. The other big addition is the K-9s from the SAPS. SAPS is becoming a permanent part of our infrastructure now. They came with us to Turkey, and now the Deputy National Commissioner has released five dogs and five handlers to come with us. So altogether, 28 search and rescue personnel, many of the paramedics, you know, people trained in structural collapse, five dog handlers and five dogs. And behind that, if necessary, we've told the Moroccan government that if your medical guys need assistance, we've got hundreds of health workers, you know, on standby for different skills come on board. And in addition to that, we can help with material aid for tents, blankets, medicines, food, and all those kind of items once we're on site.
And Dr. Imtiaz, I mean, when it comes to a rescue mission of this nature, I mean, you've already spoken about that it reminds you of Nepal in 2015. It also reminds you of the quake in Pakistan. What goes into, trying to assist a nation, especially one that is so mountainous?
It's very complicated, you know. But the fortunate part about this mountain, the houses in this mountain, they're not high houses. They're single story or double story houses, which makes it a little easier. In Turkey, it wasn't a mountain. It was flat, but it was 12 story buildings that pancaked in 2 minutes. You only saw two floors. The other 10 were missing. You know, it crumbled completely. And in Nepal, it is very, very complicated. You know, you couldn't get to the areas, the helicopters couldn't reach, people couldn't reach. It's exhausting, it takes a long time. And by the time you eventually get to the people, in some cases, you don't even worry anymore. You know, it's a bit cruel to say, you just, people are buried in the rubble and you know you're never gonna get them out because you can't reach them. In this place, it seems, look, it, besides the boulders on the road, it looks like the area is accessible because they are getting to several areas, but they need to move faster. They probably don't have enough equipment, I mean, enough manpower, or the terrain is far more complicated than we can see through the pictures. But every day they are making some progress. And the offer we've made, I mean, mentioned in the beginning, is we're not imposing ourselves on you. We certainly don't want to come and be, you know, a burden on your head. But if you need assistance, and by the time you open those roads, your armed forces are going to be exhausted because it's tough going and working through rubble. And secondly, emotionally, it's hard to see people coming out from the rubble either in distress or deceased. And worse than that is the people around, you know, who call you and say, my son is caught up in a building, my baby is right there, my family is caught up, and everybody calls you at the same time. It's very emotionally exhausting. At that point, if you open it up for teams from several countries, they can access the areas, and there's a chance, I think, we will still find live people, even if 8 or 10 days later, because these are single and double-story buildings, not more than that.
And Dr. Imtiaz, another tragedy you had to deal with not so long ago here in South Africa, in the city of Johannesburg, was indeed when we saw that building in the Johannesburg CBD going up in flames. Perhaps if you can just give us, you know, an update when it comes to, you know, your help there to the various families who've been affected by that fire.
In South Africa, we always wait for disaster management to respond first. Remember, our team members are also within disaster management, within the different structures in the country. So as a rule, we don't jump in first. We always wait for disaster management to get in, and in virtually 100% of the cases, they call us to support them. In cases of fire, where the firefighting takes a long time, the first request always is, can you please support the firefighters with liquids, energy drinks, energy biscuits, and hot meals. And we generally do that. We've done it many times. In 2017, with the Nazda fire, we supported 1,200 firefighters twice a day, but energy drinks and energy biscuits, but and meals every day. In the UCT fires, we supported firefighters again for those fires. And then in PP, last year, November, we supported firefighters, and we brought in additional personnel to support the firefighters. So in Johannesburg, we supported the firefighters. They did an excellent job.
Yeah.
In the evening, once the fire was settled, we were waiting for the, you know, the residents, survivors, to go to shelters. And when the buses came, many of them did not want to go for two reasons. One is they were afraid that what positions are left in the building will disappear. And remember, these are poor people. These are their life's positions. And secondly, the foreign nationals, they were not only foreign nationals inside there. There were many South Africans in the building also. The foreign nationals were afraid they will be taken to a transit camp and they will be deported. So they did not want to get in the buses. It was an issue of trust and suspicion. Eventually that night, 190 people did move and they went to three different shelters. We provided mattresses, blankets, food and support for them. And to cut a long story short, we supported them till Sunday. More people started coming. You know, eventually the figures got to more than 300. From the count, there were 425 people initially. But over 300 eventually went to the shelters, and we supported them right on Sunday.
All right, then, Dr. Imtiaz, thank you so much for your time.